I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the exclusive sponsor for our show, the law firm Kondorian Murad will guide you and your family in the right direction like they did for my parents, who they took great care of. They'll help you draft a will, set up a trust, and create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them Grant and Danny sent you. Score yourself a great discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Right now, caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. Congrats, you're going to win two tickets to see Creed's Summer 99 Tour this Friday, July 26th at Jiffy Lube Live. Special guest, Three Doors Down, Finger 11. Damn, that's an awesome show. That's really cool.
That's big time.
Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events, courtesy of Live Nation. Congrats to whoever is winning those tickets. On our Beltway Blitz, it's time to get things started. Let's do it. And we will begin with our buddy Craig Heist, who covers the Nats for us at 106.7 The Fan. Heistar, I was at the ballpark yesterday with my son, and I wanted to see James Wood do something cool. We saw him hit three balls over 105, four balls 100, and a three-run home run to win the game in the eighth. Not a bad day for the kid.
No, not really, and I'll tell you, you know, the first week he was up here, Grant, when he got called up, very, very impressive. Then I thought some teams started to figure him out a little bit. He started to chase a little bit, swinging at balls he normally doesn't, but yesterday hit a couple of balls in the air, but the one he hit the opposite way for the three-run homer was a shot, and comes off the first pitch from Wilson, who they brought in specifically to face him. So he wasted a little time, and that was just a great series and a sweep for the Nationals, and now they'll see what they do against the Padres.
Heisty, Kyle Finnegan threw for three straight days. I know there was a layoff there coming up to from the All-Star break, but that makes me very nervous. I don't love that sort of thing, especially for a team that's not in contention. I know they want to win the ones that they can to help reinforce it for the kids, but I do not love that. Your thoughts?
I don't have a problem with it. They're trying to win games. That's the whole object of the thing. And I've got no problem with Kyle going three straight days in a row. Now, yeah, the off day today, and we discussed this a little bit on the postgame show yesterday, is depending on what the game looks like tomorrow night against the Padres, would Davey be hesitant to use him what would be four straight days, but you also had the day off in between. I just think it depends on the situation of the game. But I really don't have a problem with using Kyle Finnegan in save situations in three straight games. And yesterday, it was a five-pitch inning, Danny. I mean, the Reds swung at everything on the first pitch, and he was out of the inning quickly.
Two-parter, sticking with the Finnegan theme. Number one, do you think he gets traded at the deadline? Because even though he's 32, he's having a great year, he could get them something decent back. And then number two, who is the other closer? Like, it would have been Hunter Harvey on a day like yesterday, probably, to avoid him and not have him pitch a third straight day. Now that Harvey's gone, who might that be so that he doesn't get overworked?
Well, two of the guys at work yesterday, certainly a possibility. And I just think overall, you look at the effort of the bullpen a couple of nights ago when Mackenzie Gore couldn't go more than two innings. They covered seven innings in the last six. Were scoreless. So, I mean, you know, you look at Floro, you look at, other guys that Davey has in that bullpen. I think it's possible, that somebody could step up. I mean, they're not going to be Kyle Finnegan, but my point is, you know, if you look at the trade deadline, it's Finnegan and Lane Thomas. Those are the two big names that could be dealt. But Mike Rizzo said over the weekend to us all, he said, not going to do that unless I get something that really makes sense for this club and our team. I don't know. I hate to lose Kyle Finnegan in a situation. And I know, Danny, you said they're not in contention. But, you know, you look at the Mets right now, they're the final wild card team, and they're 2 games over .500. Nationals are four and a half games behind them. I mean, I know there's five teams in front of them, but anything's possible. I mean, they've won 5 of 6 now, and if they get on a roll and go like on a 15 out of 22 or something, they could find themselves right back in the thing. I mean, I there's a lot of questions between now and the deadline, but those two guys, Finnegan and Lane Thomas, I think are the two guys that are most likely to have other teams wanting them at this point. And whether or not that can happen, I don't think Mike Rizzo is going to trade them unless he gets something that's really attractive.
Hey, Steve, thank you, buddy. Really appreciate it.
All right, bye.
See you, brother. Hit that NFL sounder. Our pal Benjamin Brown joining us for the Beltway Blitz, as he is wont to do. Jordan Love's not practicing, Ben. This seems like everyone's still on the same page. He's probably going to get his deal pretty soon. He had a great second half of the season last year, it feels like. How sure are we that he's bona fide, legit star that who's about to get paid like one?
I don't want to say the jury is still all the way out, but like these are the types of questions that you have to have, especially when you go for like a prolonged absence of sitting a guy. Like, answering these sort of questions becomes more and more difficult the more time they wait and sit on the bench. And to me, I very much think you can feel confidence in him. But the question that we're kind of headed into the 2024 season is like guys like CJ Stroud, guys like Jordan Love, like, are they the next bona fide candidate to really enter into, you know, being a legitimate star? And I think the jury's still very much out on that. That can be a small sample size thing in the first year, and defenses do kind of get, you know, a secondary look in the offseason at some of these guys. So this year two, you know, sort of output for both those guys is going to be very key to the long-term trajectory if they are going to be, you know, the next NFL stars at the quarterback position. But I still think that is, you know, much more of an even type proposition than what even like the betting market's projecting right now for Jordan Love in his particular case.
John Harbaugh says Lamar Jackson gets way too much flack for how good he is. Do you agree with that?
I do think so. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, the offense around him has been, you know, much better, I would say, you know, since after his, you know, MVP type season. But I think overall, like, he does it a different way. And in a lot of ways, that looks different. And maybe some of the Gaudy type plays do come from a rushing perspective. But I still think there is a legitimate superstar in there. And it does seem like, you know, the pecking order of starting quarterbacks, he does seem to always be a little bit further on down the list than what he actually has, I would say, showcased. So to me, I do think he gets a little bit too much pushback. And I very much think that, you know, when you're building a team right now, he is one of, you know, the three or four quarterbacks you'd really want to start that franchise with.
If we agree that San Francisco, on paper right now here in July, is the best team in the NFC, who's the second best?
I think, you know, to me, it is the Detroit Lions. I think the continuity aspect, you know, to me, the Eagles, you know, went out last year and tried to replace both, you know, Jonathan Gannon. They lost both their offensive defense coordinator. They're kind of starting over again, doing that for the second straight season. I do think, you know, the Lions with Ben Johnson in the fold, having that continuity at, you know, the coaching positions, quarterback, everything else, like, to me, they're a team that didn't really lose a whole lot in the offseason, and I think could very much be, you know, that 1B team to the 49ers, more so than the Philadelphia Eagles. So, you know, for my money, betting purposes, I very much think Detroit is going to be the second-best team in the NFC when it's all said and done.
When do you think we'll see Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May? We know Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels are starting in week one. We're assuming that anyway. And it's unlikely Penix plays unless Cousins gets hurt. What about the other guys?
Yeah, I think to me, Bo Nix, sooner rather than later, I do think it's, you know, if he doesn't win it going into week one, it's going to be like a week four type situation. To me, I think the jury is still very much out on J.J. McCarthy and when he actually starts. I think, you know, on the optimistic side, it's, you know, the second half of the season, but there is a possibility if Darnold plays, you know, relatively adequately, we don't see J.J. McCarthy this season. And I'm really, I would say, kind of up in the air on what the New England Patriots do with Drake May. To me, it does seem more than likely that he's going to be a guy that starts right away, but given the talent and the roster around him, I'm not sure starting Drake May is really going to set him up for long-term success. And that very much has been, you know, the question ever since the New England Patriots took him back in April.
So you mentioned the Eagles earlier, Ben, in your answer where you gave the Detroit Lions as the team. And I feel like we're overreacting a little bit to the bottom falling out to that Eagles team last year. we pretend that there's carryover in the NFL in a lot of ways from one season to the next as personnel changes and coaches move around. I think Philadelphia is still pretty damn good on paper. I've got them winning the NFC East here in July, but of course that doesn't matter at all. But I think people have kind of forgotten. They've turned in some pretty good work here over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and to your point, like they have, I would say, you know, very much, you know, hit on key pieces defensively as well. And obviously they have, you know, a pretty decent duo at the wide receiver position, of course, Jalen Hurts as well. I think some of the skepticism, you know, kind of like you mentioned, is, you know, where are we still at in the evaluation of Jalen Hurts? And how do all these pieces kind of come together, I would say, with the offensive defensive coordinator. But to me, I don't hate it, but I still think when it's all said and done, you know, if those two teams are playing in the playoffs, the Detroit Lions is probably the side that I'd still be on from a betting perspective for sure.
Ben, thanks, buddy. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Have a great show.
See you, buddy.
Let's localize the football combo. Nick Akridge of PFF, data analyst on the Commanders, joining us here on Grant and Danny. Nick, we were talking earlier about Warren Sharp's positional rankings, kind of group by group. I'm really worried about cornerback. I don't think it gets talked about enough. Benjamin St. Juste as the number one is a guy I like with this coaching staff. But behind him, there's a lot of questions. Why are they so confident in their corners, and are you?
Yeah, the first one's a good question. It's tough to be confident in this group, like you said. I mean, as St. Juste as the number one corner right now, it's, you know, it's tough to really get fully bought into that. He had a rough season last year, but you know, there's some flashes there with St. Juste. Love the you know, the wingspan and the versatility there. And yeah, it's just a lot of unproven guys after that. I mean, you know, you got Jarquavius Martin, Emmanuel Forbes, and you don't really know what they're going to do in year two. Obviously, you're hoping for a massive bounce back from Forbes, and then you bring in Sanders still. And it's just, it's tough. It's a lot of questions. So I'm still definitely concerned about that. I mean, it was probably the weakest spot on their defense last year, and I don't know if they did much to really improve it.
Nick, so Grant and I have disagreed about this a ton. We agreed that the secondary is not good. I think now it sounds like all three of us are in agreement. I'm less concerned about that. They might give up some points. Okay, they'll lose some games. To me, they have a young quarterback, and the offensive line is ranked 27th, and the receivers are ranked 21st. That's the part that I'm really concerned about. I think that is the five-alarm fire. I'd love for the defense to be better. That'd be nice. But I need the weapons and protection around Jaden Daniels to be better than they are. Again, who's right here?
Yeah, no, I kind of agree. I mean, I agree with both there. I think that, you know, for me, I think lean more towards the defense being something that they kind of really needed to fix more in the secondary in particular. But, you know, as far as the offensive line, I wasn't so far down on it last year. I know there were some problems with the left and right tackle, but I think they're just fine enough that you can kind of get by with it. The big problems last year were left guard and center, and I think they did a decent job at, you know, upgrading that. And then, you know, wide receiver, I still think is a big question as well. I would have liked to see them kind of go out there and really solidify, you know, maybe a third option. So you're not just kind of entirely hoping on, you know, Dotson having a bounce back season. So yeah, for me, I think weapons are my kind of biggest concern in terms of the offense.
Last one on this Beltway Blitz for Nick Akridge, covers the Commanders for PFF. Rookies are at camp now. Their first practice as a team is going to be Wednesday. Other than Jaden Daniels, which rookie could you see having a huge first season?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to who I talked or mentioned earlier, Sanders. So I think, you know, I think he can kind of step in right away and play slot. That's what he played really well at Michigan. I think he was a great pick. I just love the attitude. I love everything he kind of brings on a football field, and I think he's got a shot to kind of play early. So that would kind of be my pick there.
Nick, thank you as always, buddy. Have a great week.
Yep, you too, guys.
Be good. There's Nick Akridge. Check him out, PFF, doing some data analysis on the Commanders. Speaking of Washington football, Darryl Green is having his jersey retired this year. We knew that. We now know which game that ceremony is going to take place, so you can get your tickets to be there for that. We want to dive in on some of the great Washington players ever on the gridiron. We'll do that next on The Fan.
I'm John Aran.
And I have a new podcast called The Varsity.
I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant Danny 1067 the fan. Welcome back. The Commanders announced today officially they're going to retire Darryl Green's number 28 on October 20th when they host the Carolina Panthers. Game's going to be played week 7 at 4:05, one of the rare 4 o'clock games at home at the X this year. We have known Darryl Green is having his jersey retired already. That came out with a really well-done video the team
great.
Put out. It was the weekend of the draft. He was very emotional on the video. It was awesome. And by the way, it was one of the things, there have been a lot of things, I think this ownership group has done really well, but it was one of my favorite things they've done so far. Bringing him back into the fold, they sent a bus to his, literally like a passenger van bus thing, like a party bus, to go pick up all his family. Behind his back, he didn't know any of it was happening. They brought him in to read the script for the new draftees. And they had him there, and he's talking about, if you're great, you can be one of the next great Washington players like I was. And then they say, one more thing, Darryl, you got to read this one more clip. And he starts reading about how they're retiring the number 28, and you can just hear him getting overcome with emotion. In fact, Darius, if you could find that video again, it'd be great
to it's splendid.
Play a little refresher, because it's just, all it is awesome. But he found out then that his jersey was getting retired, so did the rest of us. We did not know what game until today, so October 20th, Carolina Panthers, week 7.
Very cool. That's a good one. And there's no bad answer to this. Like, do you want to do it against a rival? Do you want to do it, you know, to make the crowd juiced up and extra special? Do you want to do it one that may not be as well attended? Whatever you choose, the answer is yes. It's all good. People from my age or my age group and my era, all the way up to my dad's age and era, you know, that is an icon. The reason why, he played for 20 years. I mean, he cut across everybody from the 80s. Through the 90s into the early 2000s, you could turn on the television and 28 would be out there running around faster than everybody else. Really cool.
There are 4 retired jersey numbers in team history. Sammy Baugh's number 33, Sonny Jurgensen's number 9, Bobby Mitchell, who rocked 49, and then the number 21 for Sean Taylor. Darryl Green becomes 5th on that list. Now, there are other numbers that are not in circulation, I guess you would say. Like the numbers that don't get used, that aren't really allowed to be used. Those are numbers like Joe Theismann's number 7, although Haskins did wear that at one point in time. But Art Monk, I believe, at points, that 81, you know, wasn't used. Nobody wears 44, John Riggins. You don't see anybody wearing 42, Charlie Taylor. As an example, like those are a couple that jump out. I think 70 because of Sam Huff is on that list. But long story short, 5th player, jersey retired, team history, Darryl Green. And he was the obvious next choice, wasn't he?
I would say so.
This to me was a no-brainer that had to be done, I thought.
Yeah, he's in that group with, you know, with Riggins and Art Monk and, you know, Dave Butts and Joe Jacoby, just the icons from that era where they were more successful than anybody except for the 49ers. Like, literally, if you go through that period from 1980 through 1992, 1993, if Washington or San Francisco didn't do it, the team that did basically had to go through them to get there. You had the greatest, one of the great teams of all time in the 85 Chicago Bears, the 86 Giants were incredible. Other than that, it's pretty much then Redskins and Niners that bring up the rest of the decade. Sorry about it. Like, they were unbelievably good. So guys from that era are and should be now getting their flowers.
I don't want to speak out of school because I don't know that this was solely the issue. I know it did not help the relationship. And I don't know that this was even Darryl Green who had this issue, but it became a problem with a lot of former players. And it's a tenuous thing to talk about. I don't think any of the great legends were bothered by Sean Taylor being honored. Or getting his flowers posthumously after the tragedy that unfolded. But I've talked about this on the show. When Washington retired his jersey, it fractured relationships with some of the legends organizationally. Because what I was told was a lot of those guys who had bled and sweat and provided the tears over many, many years, 10, 15, 18-year yep. runs, some of them, with this organization, during times when they were winning championships, kind of thought, well, wait a second. I understand that he is unbelievably important to this newer era of fan. And over the last 20 plus years, there's a relationship with Taylor because of how his life tragically ended that no other player really had with the fan base. But the idea that you would retire his jersey after sadly, tragically, only a few seasons with the team before you would, just going through some of the names, like a John Riggins or a Joe Theismann or a Daryl Green or some of these others. I think with a lot of the former players, and I'm not even going to say former players, the greats, the legends, it was an issue. And they made that known to the team. But remember, Sean Taylor's jersey was not really supposed to be retired until they just kind of last second. That was a thing they did. What were they doing a distraction from? Do you remember?
I don't remember which one it was.
How that happened.
But because there was something. Some bad news came out. And they're already going to honor the old...
Was it a Washington Post story?
It might have been.
About harassment or something?
It could be.
It was definitely a look over here moment where they were doing a Sean Taylor ceremony, and then all of a sudden it became a jersey retirement. And everyone's like, wait, it is? We didn't know that. And we had his brother on, remember, who was a college safety. He's like, oh, yeah, we found out like 2 days before that it was going to be his jersey retirement. And we're like, all right, well, now we know what we need to know. That pretty much... confirms right. Our speculation.
Because they're already doing, like, these guys are here from each decade. How cool is this? 50s and 60s and 70s. And, you know, they just had this kind of shoddily, poorly produced thing that led to the porta potty pictures and Jackson Mahomes doing TikToks right on top of the painting on the field. And the whole thing was thrown together and everyone knew it. But
my point is, right. I think in just trying to, like, do something quickly as a distraction, they really aggravated a lot of the most important people in the team's history. To be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because there's kind of like a line that you're in. Especially for a team that's never retired jerseys. They just do this you can't wear them thing.
Right. Had they done the normal, and we talked about this with the, I hate bringing it up, but the posthumous Dwayne Haskins, it put Joe Theismann in an awkward spot because terrible. They didn't have this jersey retirement thing. Had they been doing that steadily, you know, hanging up the jerseys of, you know, Charlie Taylor and Bobby Mitchell and then Daryl Green and all the guys, they should have.
But they started.
But then it would have been less of a deal.
Right. But
now because you jumped the queue to go to this guy.
The new group led by Jason Wright correctly said, well, this is weird. This puts them in a terrible spot. There's no real reason. Either the jerseys are retired or they're not. Let's retire them. But you're not going to have a class where you just retire eight. I guess they could have done that. But it's smart to kind of do this one at a time. And what they had been doing is basically one a season.
Mm-hmm.
So Bobby Mitchell, 49, got the first one. Sonny Jurgensen, 9, got the second one. I don't know if they were going by like when you played or how they did it or whatever. But it makes sense, right? Sonny, yep. At his age, getting him there is difficult. Travel can be hard. So then who's next? And there's this feeling, I think, with a lot of those players like, okay, there is a basically a pecking order, so to speak. So who's next? Is it going to be Daryl or Riggins or Theismann or... And then it was Taylor from the 2004 draft and basically my era, the people like me who are under 40 who have never seen the team be good. He was our guy, which was a very cool thing, but it made them feel a certain type of way. But they have righted a lot of the wrongs, including Green being back in the fold and now retiring his jersey, which was not part of him coming back. He was already in the building reading what they wanted him to for the draft picks, not knowing his jersey was being retired. I'm not suggesting he needed his jersey retired to be part of the organization again. But I think it is a really nice kind of mea culpa. The owners didn't do anything wrong,
right.
But they're just, as they've been doing pretty much since they got here, trying to clean up after other people's messes. But just a trip down memory lane here. This was Daryl Green finding out they're retiring his number 28 this spring.
Good luck. We'll be watching.
All right. That was perfect. Yeah. We actually have a different version.
All right.
Just the last couple lines are a little different.
That's it right there.
Good.
Of all the players who have donned the burgundy and gold, only a select few have earned the highest honor of having a number retired. And now, one more. Oh, my gosh. Y'all got to be kidding me. Oh, what? Y'all are chill. Oh my God.
This is where they bring in his entire family here.
Man, y'all are really messed up, man. Man.
Oh my God. Surprise.
Man, this is too crazy. This is too crazy. Whose idea was this? Oh my gosh. I'm gonna kill somebody.
So I always say this, and I sound like such a cheese ball when I do. But with kids now, when I see that video would have been cool 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But seeing all his kids and their kids and Grandpa Daryl and like knowing what it must mean to him to have had one of the great careers ever, but that forever now, like the family gets to
immortalize, man. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like I'm getting chills thinking about it. And he did. As the clip goes on, he gets emotional and he's crying and he's thanking them for what it means. It was so beautifully done.
It was perfect. I mean, I just to try to quantify it, when you set it up with my family and Coach Richie from GW,
yeah,
when he called in to tell me I was going to the GW Athletic Hall of Fame. And all of a sudden I turn around and both my boys are there. It's like, you're filming me. I'm like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. The sky is up high and the ground is lower. And today is the day. So that's goodbye, everyone. Yeah, like that, and that's nothing compared to what Darryl Green, what he meant to millions of people. For more than two decades. So well done, so classy, so perfect.
Yeah, and so well deserved.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Just obvious. At some point, we should discuss on the phones. I don't want to take calls on this, but maybe you and I could just volley real quick. Who should be next, in your opinion, to get their jersey retired? If this is Darryl Green's year, who should be next?
Easy answer is probably Riggins. Just because the popularity, 4th-and-1, that first Super Bowl, right? That one that they won, where it all comes down, the whole world knows it's coming, and the poor Miami Dolphins defender got his finger broken, trying to hold on to the diesel, rumbling for a touchdown, changing everything. That's probably the easiest one. There are other unbelievable players, whether it's Joe Jacoby, Art Monk, from that era, obviously that stand out that are, you know, one is a Hall of Famer, one should be a Hall of Famer. But to me, probably the easiest answer is Riggins.
I think that's probably right. I mean, that's the name to me that I think of that stands out that should be next. But I think there's options. You know, and they're doing it now is the correct way to do it. But here's, I think, what we should do on the phones. MGM National Harbor Listener Lines, let's open them back up at 800-636-1067. Darryl Green was arguably the greatest player in team history. Who was the greatest Redskin football teamer, maybe, commander, possibly, although it might be tough, that you ever saw in your lifetime, whatever span that is, of being a fan? So for you, Danny, when did you start your fandom?
As a three-year-old, 1982, 83.
Okay.
Pretty good time to do it.
So 80, your first memories are mid-80s?
Yes.
On. For me, my earliest memories are mid to late, I'd say late 90s, like 97-ish, really, on. My guy is going to be different than your guy. And Darryl Green's in the conversation, but Darryl Green was at the very end of his career.
Which just speaks to it, by the way, that he played for that long. He was that good for that long.
Unbelievable. Who was the greatest football player? I won't go through all the names again, but in D.C., that you actually saw play. And is it Darryl Green, perhaps? 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Darryl Green is having his jersey retired by the Commanders. Former Commanders great, Darryl Green. And it just always pops.
Yeah, it's just not.
What do you want me to do?
I don't know.
Played for the Redskins. Sorry about your luck. Former Redskins great, Darryl Green, jersey retired by the Commanders. And now we know when. It's going to be week 7, 4:00 game, Carolina Panthers. Excited about that. Late October, a little before Halloween. We want to know who the greatest Redskin or Commander or football teamer, team history, Washington football, greatest player you actually saw with your own two eyes. So I think this is going to be age-related maybe in some cases. We'll hit the phones on this. There's a couple lines open. Looks like a lot of diversity and answers too, which is awesome. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. My favorite player ever was Chris Cooley because at a time in my childhood and kind of when I'm playing football and playing with the boys in the yard, he was a guy I related to and catch the short pass and break a tackle and yell Cooley and had fun. Like he was at every jersey, burgundy, white, replica, throwback, alternate, all the stuff. But I wouldn't say he was the best. Like he was a good player. He was a good tight end. But to me, Darryl Green is up on this list. I just saw him at the very, very end. And this was 40-year-old Darryl Green. You know, my memories of him are in his upper 30s, 40, and he was an undersized corner who still made a bunch of plays, and it's crazy that he was able to do it at that level. But it wasn't quite like special Hall of Fame Darryl Green. Trent Williams comes to mind for me. I covered him. He was one of my favorite players I ever covered, so I was not only still around the team as, you know, watching them every weekend, but I traveled every game. I was in the locker room. I got to know him very well. And from 2010 through 2013, covering him every single day, that's a Hall of Famer. That's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Yeah. I do think he probably got better is not the right word. He's getting more credit now and attention now than when he was here, probably, and helping in his Hall of Fame.
Playing on all those winning teams.
Status and candidacy. But he was already that level of player, like an all-pro type left tackle year in and year out, and one of the most athletic players to ever play the position. So Trent Williams could be my answer, and then Sean Taylor would be the other one. It was fleeting, sadly, and it didn't last as long as it should have, but people just forget how big, how fast, how strong, how he moved. There aren't other models, as I like to say, on the shelf, man. It didn't exist. So that would be the short list for me of my answers of greatest players team history that I've seen with my own eyes.
You could throw a few in for me, having the benefit of a few more years on you. Everyone from Joe Jacoby at left tackle anchoring the Hogs to even Jim Lachey, who took over at left tackle for the best offensive line I've ever seen. That, you know, statuesque Mark Rippon didn't need the laundry machine after every game because he didn't get knocked down at all. He was incredible. My favorite player of all time is Art Monk. I've been very open about that. I love him so much. He gave away a gift football at a car dealership, but I couldn't talk to him. I cried and just panicked and went home.
I love him so much. Is he the best? He's your favorite. Is he also the best?
No, the answer is Dale Green. And it, you know, it's not like it breaks my heart. I'm happy to talk about any of this, but you got to go back to some of the incredible moments. The 87 playoff run. They're losing to the Bears. Darryl Green ends up bringing them back. Touchdown on a punt return, sprains his ribs, can barely play, and breaks up a fourth down pass the following week in the NFC title game against the Minnesota Vikings to send him to the Super Bowl. Oof. Decades worth of achievement at the highest level. You're talking 4 or 5 interceptions consistently, returning punts when it was a big deal. He was a weapon, just an amazing player with huge clutch performances. Don't sleep on Monks too, by the way, some of his playoff numbers, but the answer is Darryl Green.
Let's go to Jeff in Hanover on Grant and Danny. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, guys. I don't see how more people aren't voting for Darryl Green.
Well, in fairness, you're the first person to vote, so we'll see.
That's what I'm saying.
There we go.
20 years at a cornerback position, that's phenomenal. All the Pro Bowls he made, when we really needed a kick return, like in the Chicago game,
yep,
that you were just talking about, Darryl Green did it. And he was just such a good guy on and off the field.
One of the few all-pros, too, in team history. Thank you for the call. 7 Pro Bowls, multiple Super Bowl rings, was the, to your point on the off-the-field stuff, Walter Payton Man of the Year in 96, rather, and obviously a Hall of Famer on the All-90s team. Question is, they're going to retire Darryl Green's jersey in Week 7. Who is the greatest player that you've seen with your own eyes in team history? Let's go to Jeremiah in Fairfax. What's up, Jeremiah?
How y'all doing? Thank you for having me on.
Good, buddy.
So just for context, I'm 22. The answer is Sean Taylor, but that's not what I'm going to say just because everyone who's my age is going to say that. My two honorable mentions, one was Trent Williams, so that obviously has to be thrown out there, Hall of Famer. But the other one I don't think people will say is Champ Bailey, and that's only because he was here for 3 or 4 years. But we need to give him the credit he deserves for how good of a player he was while he was here. And also, just for a last one to throw in, Terry McLaurin when he's playing the Eagles. Greatest receiver of all time. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, dude.
McLaurin against the Eagles is a first ballot all-time
great. If he only got to play the Eagles. Bailey's an interesting one. I mean, the short-term guys that had their amazing flares here, if you're asking who's the best you saw, that could be 1 year, right? That could be a 2-year run. Let's say for the Terry Allen was unbelievable for a couple of seasons here in town. So it was Clinton Portis. But we don't think of him that way as like the best players in team history because they didn't have all the longevity. But dude, I mean, if that's the question, is doesn't matter. We didn't specify the time frame. Who's the best you saw? Champ Bailey is a Hall of Famer in his own right. That's a pretty good answer.
That's a great answer. That's a really good call because I hadn't even thought of Champ, who was one of my favorite players of my childhood.
Did you have a dog named Champ?
I had a puppy. Yep. My parents got me a dog. I always wanted a dog in middle school. They brought it home. Now, I didn't pick the type of puppy, although I ended up loving Champ enough that it didn't matter. It was a Pomeranian Chihuahua, which is a little bit tough.
Okay.
But my parents do, my mom specifically does small dogs. But Champ was the best. A little black and white dog. Loved him. Champ Bailey, man. That was my dog. But also, my dog on the football field, if you know what I mean.
And I do.
He had some dog in him.
Mm-hmm.
Played from 99 to 2003, so it was a five-season run, wanted a contract. You had got into the dispute with Dan Snyder, shocker. Like most people left here, annoyed by the organization. They trade him for Clinton Portis. It was him in a second-round pick. And Champ Bailey, like Darryl Green, is now a Hall of Famer. 12 Pro Bowls, 3 All-Pros. So, yeah, he was already great, by the way. He led the league in passes defended at one point. He was an All-Pro in the second team, I think, 3 times in his 5 years to start his career. 7th overall pick, which didn't really happen at that time in the secondary. That's a really, really good answer. Let's go to Sean in Fairfax on G&D. What's up, Sean?
Hey, guys. Great topic. I love this subject.
Thank you.
I'm a little bit older, so I've been watching the Skins since 72. One player, this isn't my choice, but one player that really stands out is Charlie Taylor. He was fantastic. He led the league in receptions for a long time. But I'm going to go with Riggins. John Riggins was the man, and in those years that he was playing here, he was consistent, and he was just tough, and he's a bad dude. I wish you could say a collective vote for the Hogs and the offensive line, but if there's one individual that really stands out for me, it's John Riggins. He's the man.
Appreciate you. Just because I don't know if we're going to get another Charlie Taylor, I want to point out that Hall of Famer, 8 Pro Bowls, was an All-Pro, All-60s team, and he was doing things at that time other guys weren't doing. He led the league in catches with over 70 grabs a couple straight years, routinely up around 800, 900 receiving yards at a time where that didn't really happen.
Yeah, he went over 1,100 yards in a time where it's like Babe Ruth almost in terms of home runs.
Riggins, I don't think, needs a whole lot of additional context. You can't walk into a basement, a man cave of a fan of this team and not see the iconic picture of him running away from the Dolphins with the Super Bowl that hangs in our boss's office.
That's right.
At 106.7.
Everybody knows.
Event. Hall of Famer. Somehow only made one Pro Bowl. I'd like to double-click on that. Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP, all-80s team. Certainly a very, very good answer. Question is, Darryl Green's jersey's getting retired in Week 7. Who was the greatest Washington football player, doesn't matter what team name, you ever saw with your eyes? And everybody's answer is going to be shaped clearly by their fandom and their age. G&D on the Fan. Darryl Green is having his jersey retired by the Commanders. Former Commanders great, Darryl Green. It just always pops.
Yeah, it's just not.
What do you want me to do?
I don't know.
Played for the Redskins. Sorry about your luck. Former Redskins great, Darryl Green, jersey retired by the Commanders. And now we know when. It's going to be Week 7, 4 o'clock game, Carolina Panthers. Excited about that. Late October, a little before Halloween. We want to know who the greatest Redskin or Commander or football teamer, team history, Washington football, greatest player you actually saw with your own two eyes. So I think this is going to be age-related maybe in some cases. We'll hit the phones on this. There's a couple lines open. Looks like a lot of diversity and answers too, which is awesome. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. My favorite player ever was Chris Cooley because at a time in my childhood and kind of when I'm playing football and playing with the boys in the yard, he was a guy I related to and catch the short pass and break a tackle and yell Cooley and had fun. Like he was at every jersey, burgundy, white, replica, throwback, alternate, all the stuff. But I wouldn't say he was the best. Like he was a good player. He was a good tight end. But to me, Darryl Green is up on this list. I just saw him at the very, very end. And this was 40-year-old Darryl Green. You know, my memories of him are in his upper 30s, 40. And he was an undersized corner who still made a bunch of plays, and it's crazy that he was able to do it at that level. But it wasn't quite like special Hall of Fame Darryl Green. Trent Williams comes to mind for me. I covered him. He was one of my favorite players I ever covered. So I was not only still around the team as, you know, watching them every weekend, but I traveled every game. I was in the locker room. I got to know him very well. And from 2010 through 2013, covering him every single day, that's a Hall of Famer. That's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Yeah. I do think he probably got better is not the right word. he's getting more credit now and attention now than when he was here, probably, and helping in his Hall of Fame.
Playing all those winning teams.
Status and candidacy. But he was already that level of player, like an all-pro type left tackle year in and year out, and one of the most athletic players to ever play the position. So Trent Williams could be my answer, and then Sean Taylor would be the other one. It was fleeting, sadly, and it didn't last as long as it should have, but people just forget how big, how fast, how strong, how he moved. There aren't other models, as I like to say, on the shelf, man. It didn't exist. So that would be the short list for me of my answers of greatest players team history that I've seen with my own eyes.
You could throw a few in for me, having the benefit of a few more years on you. Everyone from Joe Jacoby at left tackle anchoring the Hogs to even Jim Lachey, who took over at left tackle for the best offensive line I've ever seen. That, you know, statuesque Mark Rippon didn't need the laundry machine after every game because he didn't get knocked down at all. He was incredible. My favorite player of all time is Art Monk. I've been very open about that. I love him so much. He gave away a gift football at a car dealership, but I couldn't talk to him. I cried and just panicked and went home.
I love him so much. Is he the best? He's your favorite. Is he also the best?
No, the answer is Dale Green. And it, you know, it's not like it breaks my heart. I'm happy to talk about any of this, but you got to go back to some of the incredible moments. The 87 playoff run. They're losing to the Bears. Darryl Green ends up bringing them back. Touchdown on a punt return, sprains his ribs, can barely play, and breaks up a fourth down pass the following week in the NFC title game against the Minnesota Vikings to send him to the Super Bowl. Oof. Decades worth of achievement at the highest level. You're talking 4 or 5 interceptions consistently, returning punts when it was a big deal. He was a weapon, just an amazing player with huge clutch performances. Don't sleep on Monks too, by the way, some of his playoff numbers, but the answer is Darryl Green.
Let's go to Jeff in Hanover on Grant and Danny. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, guys. I don't see how more people aren't voting for Darryl Green.
Well, in fairness, you're the first person to vote, so we'll see.
That's what I'm saying.
There you go.
20 years at a cornerback position, that's phenomenal. All the Pro Bowls he made, when we really needed a kick return, like in the Chicago game,
yep,
that you were just talking about, Darryl Green did it. And he was just such a good guy on and off the field.
One of the few all-pros, too, in team history. Thank you for the call. 7 Pro Bowls, multiple Super Bowl rings, was the, to your point on the off-the-field stuff, Walter Payton Man of the Year in 96, rather, and obviously a Hall of Famer on the All-90s team. Question is, they're going to retire Darryl Green's jersey in Week 7. Who is the greatest player that you've seen with your own eyes in team history? Let's go to Jeremiah in Fairfax. What's up, Jeremiah?
How y'all doing? Thank you for having me on.
Good, buddy.
So just for context, I'm 22. The answer is Sean Taylor, but that's not what I'm going to say just because everyone who's my age is going to say that. My two honorable mentions, one was Trent Williams, so that obviously has to be thrown out there, Hall of Famer. But the other one I don't think people will say is Champ Bailey, and that's only because he was here for 3 or 4 years. But we need to give him the credit he deserves for how good of a player he was while he was here. And also, just for a last one to throw in, Terry McLaurin when he's playing the Eagles. Greatest receiver of all time. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, dude.
McLaurin against the Eagles is a first ballot all-time
great. If he only got to play the Eagles. Bailey's an interesting one. I mean, the short-term guys that had their amazing flares here, if you're asking who's the best you saw, that could be 1 year, right? That could be a 2-year run. Let's say Terry Allen was unbelievable for a couple of seasons here in town. So it was Clinton Portis. But we don't think of them that way as like the best players in team history because they didn't have all the longevity. But dude, I mean, if that's the question, is doesn't matter. We didn't specify the time frame. Who's the best you saw? Champ Bailey is a Hall of Famer in his own right. That's a pretty good answer.
That's a great answer. That's a really good call because I hadn't even thought of Champ, who was one of my favorite players of my childhood.
Did you have a dog named Champ?
I had a puppy. Yep. My parents got me a dog. I always wanted a dog in middle school. They brought it home. Now, I didn't pick the type of puppy, although I ended up loving Champ enough that it didn't matter. It was a Pomeranian Chihuahua, which is a little bit tough.
Okay.
But my parents do, my mom specifically does small dogs. But Champ was the best. Little black and white dog. Loved him. Champ Bailey, man. That was my dog. But also, my dog on the football field, if you know what I mean.
And I do.
He had some dog in him.
Mm-hmm.
Played from 99 to 2003, so it was a 5-season run. Wanted a contract. You had got into the dispute with Dan Snyder, shocker. Like most people left here, annoyed by the organization. They trade him for Clinton Portis. It was him in a second-round pick. And Champ Bailey, like Darryl Green, is now a Hall of Famer. 12 Pro Bowls, 3 All-Pros. So, yeah, He was already great, by the way. He led the league in passes defended at one point. He was an all-pro in the second team, I think, three times in his 5 years at the start of his career. Seventh overall pick, which didn't really happen at that time in the secondary. That's a really, really good answer. Let's go to Sean in Fairfax on G&D. What's up, Sean?
Hey, guys. Great topic. I love this subject.
Thank you.
I'm a little bit older, so I've been watching the Skins since 72. One player, this isn't my choice, but one player that really stands out is Charlie Taylor. He was fantastic. He led the league in receptions for a long time. But I'm going to go with Riggins. John Riggins was the man, and in those years that he was playing here, he was consistent, and he was just tough, and he's a bad dude. I wish you could say a collective vote for the Hogs and the offensive line, but if there's one individual that really stands out for me, it's John Riggins. He's the man.
Appreciate you. Just because I don't know if we're going to get another Charlie Taylor, I want to point out that Hall of Famer, 8 Pro Bowls, was an all-pro, all-60s team, and he was doing things at that time other guys weren't doing. He led the league in catches with over 70 grabs a couple straight years, routinely up around 800, 900 receiving yards at a time, where that didn't really happen.
Yeah, he went over 1,100 yards in a time where it's like Babe Ruth almost in terms of home runs.
Riggins, I don't think, need a whole lot of additional context. You can't walk into a basement, a man cave of a fan of this team and not see the iconic picture of him running away from the Dolphins with the Super Bowl that hangs in our boss's office.
That's right.
At 106.
Everybody knows.
Hall of Famer. Somehow only made one Pro Bowl. I'd like to double click on that. Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP, all 80s team. Certainly a very, very good answer. Question is, Daryl Green's jersey's getting retired in week 7. Who was the greatest Washington football player, doesn't matter what team name, you ever saw with your eyes? And everybody's answer is going to be shaped clearly by their fandom and their age. G&D on the Fan.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.